excuse me, you don't mind if I wear my shades. Sometimes the brilliant light of my intellect blinds. Bring it up there. Look at that, please.
Farewell.
Oh, hello there, gang. As you remember, as we left our little house halfway up in the block. If you remember, yesterday we were on Chapter 3 of Mrs. Fox and the Cabbage Patch. And that we will continue reading just a moment. Uncle Wiggily here, friend. All right, just a moment. Get out of the way. All right, here we are. Hello there, gang. Shucks, what, Hello, there he is. Now, what is that? Mrs. Boggs? No, it wasn't Mrs. Boggs and the Cabbage Patch. It was Mrs. Boggs and the Turnip Patch. Mrs. Boggs and the Turnip Patch. And I was surprised at the number of pistachio fans that we uncovered a couple of days ago. You know, it's amazing. I thought that I was one of the few guys who remembered the story of that kid, you know, who was made out of wood. I think it was balsa wood. And whenever he'd tell a lie, his nose would grow longer. It was Italian. Pistachio is his name. And I got a tremendous number of people who wrote in and said they, too, remembered that. And I just like to salute all of you out there for having a modicum of memory and keeping a little grip on, you know, what little you've got. So, not easy, I know that. Here it is, the beginning of the week, and it's July, you know, and the ball teams are off for the All-Star break, and you didn't get any votes again. Well, what the hell? You know, 6-1 half is it. You got to learn. You seriously have to learn. To those of you out there who've never been picked on any team, much less an all-star team, who spend most of your life. This is a male thing. Girls don't often choose up size formally. They do it philosophically and often biologically, but they don't choose up size formally the way male types do. There's hardly a man, male type, listening tonight who has not spent a few terrible moments in some playground or some place where they're about to play a game. And two guys, the guys with the crew cuts, two guys are choosing up, and they got this bat, and their hands are moving up the bat. See, and finally, the last guy says, "Chicken claws, you fink." The other guy says, "I said no fair chicken claws." He says, "Forget it. I got chicken claws. I'll take Howie." And you ain't Howie. And they start picking. And the crowd gets smaller and smaller. Till at long last, there's just three of you left. You and Clarence and little Freddie. You wind up a tie-in deal. But you can play if you'll play, if they'll take Freddie too. Deep out in right field you go. Of course, the rule of the game is that no balls can be hit in right field, because if they hit out there, you're out anyway. And now you're knee-deep out there in that dark, stygian blackness. No wonder. Have you noticed that all men are preachers? Men are preachers and women are parishioners. A different scene. Man has looked into the dark, the depths of it all, and has never quite understood why. Women, you know, they just skate along like lady. Have you noticed they call those little bugs ladybugs? They skate along, you know, flying. And I have a story here tonight. We got to get this week off just to let you know some of the great. Wow, what a fantastic half-hour TV show this would make. Listen to this now. Yeah, imagine what it would be like if they did TV shows about the way life really is. I mean, the way things really happen. Now, here, for example, is a little note that came in on the UPI wire from Blytheville, Arkansas. Now, I know something about Arkansas. You know, I'm gradually slipping into that talk. I know something about Arkansas, you know, because I one time spent 3 days in Blytheville, Arkansas, in a company of soldiers that were putting sandbags on the levee of the river there. Now, I can tell you something about Blytheville, and boy, I'll tell you, those guys know something about what's happening in that the other world, the darkness of the world. You know, out there where those evil things. Did you see this commercial the other day? There's a great TV commercial on about hell. You seen it? I mean, you always think of the devil as a man. You notice that? You never think of a lady devil. And yet, there's this great TV commercial where these people all show up, and there's the devil. And he's standing there, and he says, he's got a vague foreign accent. He says, "Glad to meet you." He says, "Welcome. I'd like to show you around." He says, "A little bit. And over here, you see, first, I would like to show you our sauna bath room, and he opens up this sauna bath. The smoke comes flying out. All these people look, eyeballs bulging. Well, these people out there in Blytheville, Arkansas, have seen the other side of the hinges. And you don't know what the main phrase means? Blytheville, Arkansas. Listen, picture the scene in your mind. I'm going to give you a mental television show. See it in your mind now. Got the scene? Blytheville, Arkansas, friends. The credits open up. It says, script by Harlan Ellison. Open the door softly before the hinges of hell get too hot. And then, thum-thum-thum-thum, that's the opening of the scene, see? And that's a brief moment where we have a Kraft cheese commercial. And the guy comes and says, before we visit the hinges of hell tonight, let's take a look at the new cinnamon paprika cheese rarebit by Kraft. Pouring it over, and, you know the scene. Now he comes back, and we get all the credits. Suzanne Fichette plays the little crippled girl who gets leukemia. Richard Chamberlain plays the young, honest man who comes out from Boston and is a medical student. And we... oh, you know, it's a TV film. But I want you to listen carefully to this scene, not picture. The Reverend Edward R. Black said he had just ended his final sermon at the New Providence Baptist Church in Blytheville, Arkansas, when his congregation fell upon him and beat him full sore. The trouble was, according to Deacon Charles Buff, the preacher asked the Lord, and I quote at this point, he looked down at his congregation and said, I asked the Lord to strike them all dead right here. And saying that to his congregation, in the middle of a fantastic scene, you'd have to have Jack Palance playing the Reverend Black, see? Or Burl Ives would even be better. The Burl Ives up there, you know, snorting and spitting around. This left the flock so wrought. I'm quoting the news bulletin here, that left the flock so wrought. And there ain't many people get wrought these days. It left the flock so wrought, said the deacon, that the ladies even rent each other's raiments. The Reverend Black said he turned the other cheek, only to have a lady poke him in the eye with her crutch. As the Reverend turned his cheek, the action, it was revealed in municipal court here in Blytheville, took place Sunday in the 160-member church at Buckeye, Arkansas. Black had resigned and had preached his final sermon. Buck said he arose after the sermon to make an announcement. And that's when the Sabbath started to get rapidly violated. We quote, the preacher refused to let the announcement be made, he said. That started an argument. The preacher ordered some of the men out of the house. Then Buck continued, Preacher Black ordered the Lord to strike the congregation dead on the spot. Well, at that point, some of the women, quote, got into a little hair-pulling combat, Buck said. That sparked a fight between some men that involved knives. And then the preacher hollered, for the Lord's sake, stop! Well, that was evidently not the right thing to say. Recall, Black, one woman then hit me in the eye with her crutch. Then they all began to hit me. I thought they were going to kill me right there. Buck and several other members of the congregation appeared on disturbing the peace charges. Black said he has two fractures of his right hand and must take off for at least 2 weeks when he will preach his next sermon on turning the other cheek. Kind of nice, you know, a family that, what is it, does together, stays together? I don't know why, you know, these things, what is it, the family? Is somebody calling about Mrs. Boggs? There, that's a good story. I say you ought to read it, make a terrific piece. Would you give me a little Armageddon music, please? Hit it hard. Dear, they're playing our tune. Very nice. That was very nice. I just want to salute the Reverend out there. You know, it's the middle of July, and if you notice a slight undercurrent of insouciance tonight, perhaps even a slight undercurrent of instability tonight, I'd like to plead guilty to something here which has not afflicted many of you, I'm sure, because most of you are from the East here and don't know that this is the heart of the cantaloupe season. And for anyone who has come from a cantaloupe county and who knows the cantaloupe well, this is a very nervous time. It's like for old devout Christians get a little nervous around Easter time, and it's very important. The lemmings get nervous at certain times of the year. Well, we cantaloupe people at this time of the year have difficulty restraining ourselves because have any of you out there, do you know that there are at least three states now that have declared the cantaloupe illegal because of its habit-forming propensities? Oh, you get that cantaloupe monkey in your back, man, I'll tell you, they just you can't bust it. And especially when the cantaloupes are ripened in the sun and they get a little fermented. I've seen guys start on a cantaloupe bender late Friday night and not come home until the following Wednesday. Cantaloupe to the ears, trailing seeds. I mean, you know, fist fights, their clothing ripped and torn. And I think maybe tonight, since it is mid-July now, or getting close to it, I think tonight I'm going to have to tell the story about the only time that I've ever actually had the fear of getting genuinely shot in my mind. You know, with all this talk about guns, how many of you have ever had a gun really fired at you? Actually fired right at you. Not many can recall that blessed moment, that strange incident. Well, I'm going to tell you about the time that, if you don't mind, speaking of Armageddon, I just thought I'd, in passing, tell you this is WOR, friends. And it's a righteous station, you know. We worry a lot about people here, you know, WOR. We're deeply concerned, deeply involved. And I'm sorry, I left my copy of Mrs. Boggs and the Turnip Patch down on the 20th floor. I would have read you the third chapter tonight, but you know how it is. You leave things, and I wish I was. I'll remember it a couple of nights from now. Things come and go, you know. It's sometimes not easy. Incidentally, we did have a call Pistachio. It was an animated full-length cartoon by Disney, and not much of a cartoon. I didn't care much for it, but I kind of liked the characters. A lot of character involved in it. But I'm a kid one time seeing, and I'm gonna admit something to you here tonight that I've really not really done much in the way of admitting in the past, but I have a larcenous soul. I think most people have. I read a story the other day, just a little story about an airlines pilot. And he was an airlines pilot in Britain, BOAC, in fact. He flew 707s. That's a big-time pilot. I mean, that guy's not flying around in any little Cherokee. You know, he's not putzing around in any little 150 Cessna over the patch. He's flying a big plane, see? And so he's flying a 707, and he decides one night, he's sitting around, he'd like to do a little moonlighting. And, it's a pilot, real pilot, BOAC, international stuff, see? So he gets a job at a bed frame repair company, which pays like $12 a week. And he's working there repairing bed frames. And one day the foreman comes and says, say, the boys are a little curious. You don't seem to be our type. He says, what do you mean? He says, well, what'd you do before you come here? He says, well, I had a job. I still do work once in a while. He says, well, then the foreman says, well, where do you work? He says, well, I work at London Airport. He says, London Airport? Well, how come you can work here? He says, well, I only work there three times a month. He says, three times a month? What do you do there? He says, well, I fly this airplane there. He says, what kind of airplane do you fly? He says, well, it's an airplane. I said, well, is it a little airplane? What do you do? You private pilot? You go out there and play around? He says, well, no, actually, it's 117 passengers. He says, you fly it three times a week? Well, where do you fly it to? Well, Istanbul, Rome, Tokyo, Jakarta. And instantly, the entire plant went out on strike. They were bucked. And you know that all of England is now in an uproar over that issue? Can a man who makes $40,000 a year moonlight in a plant where the union requires that they get paid $14 a week? And there's a big issue there. In fact, it would be a great idea to bring it to a test here. This is a democracy, you know. And it works both ways, you know. It doesn't only work from the low end up. It works from the up end down. What would happen, say, if the president of the Chase Manhattan Bank got a job working nights at Needick's on the corner of 40th and 6th? Well, I'm asking a question, an honest question. You know, he's, you know, he's frying away the hamburgers there on the hot plate. And one of the guys, you know, they says, "Hey, Mac, come on, come on, come on with a pickle early. Let's get moving here." And suddenly one of the guys at the counter recognizes this guy as a guy he saw on a calendar. He says, "Hey, Mac, aren't you on some calendar? What do you do, work for the calendar company?" He says, "Why, no, I happen to work for Chase Manhattan. I'm, president of Chase Manhattan." And the entire, the rest of the crew walks out. Now, I don't know, you know, it's theological. You get into these questions of religion, you get into pretty deep water. Honey, I've made the break. Now, do you want another one? I'd be glad to make you another one. So, it would pay my producer to listen to my show. I say, "Oh, I see, you've been writing things down." I said, "That's quite often what happens to bureaucrats. They get writing things down, the war starts, the continent crumbles, and they're still writing, you know." But, in fact, you know that I read a note speaking about that. I read that there's an office in Washington that is still attempting to collate surplus from the Spanish-American War. They're still working. You know, the Spanish-American War surplus. Of course, all that stuff's being sold down to the village. And, oh, yeah, there's nothing like seeing a 12-year-old Spanish-American War veteran with acne come into the Fiend John, you know, and you get very heady on cappuccino and stuff down there. But nevertheless, I'm a kid one time, and me and Schwartz and Flick, it's the middle of July. You know, there's a point when you reach in about this time of the year, man gets a tremendous sense, a fantastic sense of itchiness. I mean, the vacation bit is beginning to really get deep down in the marrow of the bones. The grown-up men stand by the hour and look in the windows at Abercrombie and Fitch. And they walk up and down, they look in the windows at Abercrombie, and you see them on the fourth floor and the sixth floor and the eighth floor over at Abercrombie. And it's that itch to do it, to split, to do something. Well, it affects kids very strongly. And about this time of the year, the middle of the month of July, vacation has already ceased to be a new thing. You know, you start around the first week of June, second week of June. Now you've been out for a month, and you kind of accept being out. And now you start casting around. You get the itch. The sun hangs up there in the sky. And one time, me and Schwartz and Flick and Bruner are on our bikes, and there was a river about, two or three miles south of our town. And once in a great while, we would take our bikes and ride out to that river. It was the smelliest. Believe me, friends, this river makes the Hackensack River smell like Chanel No. 5. This river flowed through the Griselli Chemical Company. And the Griselli Chemical Company used the river as something to clean their test tubes, or it ran through the pots or something. And the river would come out of the Griselli Chemical Company a deep purplish-brown color with great oil splotches all over the top of it. And then it would flow through the Indiana countryside, flat and low. And the mud was smelly, dark, and black. And that was called going to the river. Me and Flick and Schwartz, Bruna get on a bike, and we ride through the sunshine. Hot, just to go to the river. We'd ride, ride, and ride. 3 miles, good long trip on a bike. And finally, reached the river, which was laying out there in fields, the kind of fields that you see out around Flemington, New Jersey. Sort of half flat, rolling fields, roll on and on. And laying in the middle of it all was that black, smelly, stinky, scummy river. It was a flat river. And we would go down the bank of the river in thick, gummy mud. We'd look down at the water. The water was so black, so dirty, so polluted, that an inch, maybe 2 inches from the shore, you couldn't see the bottom. Black. You'd take a handful of that water, and it was like a handful of blackberry juice or something, just black water. We'd look down at the water. Once in a while, we would fish with corks for the bullheads that lived in there. Summertime, seeing the sun was beating down. We didn't want the fish. We had no interest in the fish. We had no interest in the mud. It was the itch that was doing it to us. Now, girls don't have this itch. Now, all the girls are going to write me angry letters and say, "Yes, they do." I'm sorry. This is not a recorded fact. This is a male thing. Males do it later on when they grow up. They grow beards. get into float planes and go to lakes 4 miles south of the Arctic Circle to wallow in mud, stand knee-deep in lily pads and mosquitoes. Nobody can explain it, you know? I mean, it's like Larry here. Larry buys himself a $65 sleeping bag and goes and sleeps out in the woods in Jersey. Lets the helgramites bite him. Things come in the night and go bump. And it's an urge. You can't put it down into words. Believe me, the first caveman that was squashed down on his haunches there in a cave. And cavemen have been living in caves now for 4,000 years, maybe a million years. And one looks to the other one day. Charlie looks over at Og and says, "He did me here." And Og waits, because you see, reaction time was maybe 2 or 3 years in those days. Man's brain was still made out of raspberry jello. A little touch of cheesecake in there. And finally, Og turns to him and goes, "He did." "What you say?" Well, it takes another 2 years to get the message out. And finally, Charlie gets it across to Og. The great message. Translated, "I'm going to camp out tonight." Well, nobody understood it. I mean, the rest of the cave people huddled around the fire there and the wind screaming through the trees. The great saber-toothed tiger bellowing into the ambient air. Why did he want to go out? Nobody knows. That's man's curse. I'm talking about the male curse. It's related to Ahab. I mean, Ahab, hanging out at the poop deck of the Pequod there, going out into the dark, wine-dark sea, looking for the big white whale, Queequeg, and Ishmael, all of them. In that tiny birch bark, that cockle shell, going out into that howling gale. Why? I wonder how many men feel vaguely a pang of guilt when they get into their camper. I mean, a camper's a split-level house, for crying out loud, on wheels, you know? I'm talking about, oh, yeah, you know? And I remember one time laying on my back after 3 years in the Army. I'm on my back in a pup tent. And there's this continuous rain beating down on this little pup tent. And Goldberg is in the pup tent next to me. We had our shelter halves up, you know. And we could smell the, you know, the rain coming down on the mud. 3 years. And I'm lying on my back. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. And I know that in 15 minutes we're going to be up. Another 25 miles slogging in the goo. With Lieutenant Cherry, our fearless leader, up there ahead in his Jeep, barking commands. Telling us to get going and pulling that gut. I'm lying there flat on my back, and I could see Goldberg. His pipe is glowing in the dark. You never see these scenes of guys actually in pup tents. His pipe is glowing in the dark. And he's smoking this fantastic... He had a tobacco that made Saturday night in a Turkish house of pleasure. You know, a place where they sell hot dogs and stuff. He had this tobacco, I'm serious, that must have been a combination of hashish, powdered rose leaves, vanilla, and some kind of sparkler powder, because it made sparks that would go in the air. And this purple smoke hanging in the air there in the little tent, the rain is beating down. It's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I said, "Hey, Goldberg, are you awake?" "Yeah." Rain beating down. Said, "Goldberg, you know, one day we're going to think back on these days." I said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah." The rain continues to roar down. 3 years, and Goldberg and I had climbed together up the ladder of command. I am now a full corporal. Goldberg is a PFC. By the way, the week after that, I was no longer a corporal. I was only a corporal for 4.5 weeks. That was another mess, but that's another story. I said to Goldberg, the rain continues to pour, roar down on that tent. I said, "Goldberg, has it ever occurred to you?" He said, "What?" "Has it ever occurred to you, Goldberg, we're camping out?" "That's right." So we're really camping out, Goldberg. This is the stuff guys get merit badges for. Goldberg says, yeah, merit badge. We could hear the water trickling down our ridge pole, soaking our fatigues for the following day. Well, nothing like a pair of wet fatigues for a good 20-hour march. I'll tell you, I had a pair of fatigues that were wet for over 2 years. Had moss under the arms. Boy, I'll tell you. Oh, yeah, little compost heaps on the kneecaps. And smell, listen, at night I could hear my fatigues. I had two pair of them. I could hear my fatigues talking to each other. They were alive. The rain beats down. I said, hey, Goldberg, do you think when you get out, you'll want to go camping? Pregnant pause. Rain beats down more. I said, yeah, I think so. I said, why? Another long pause. The rain is roaring down. You could hear somewhere off in the distance the KPs are rattling around, banging the pots together, preparing another mess of SOS, our breakfast. And you could smell the smoke in the air, the kerosene smoke, the stoves. I said, Gasser tells me that when he gets out, he's going to make a house out of brick and bury it underground. Never go out. Goldberg says, that's Gasser. I said, are you going camping? He said, yep. I said, why? Damned if I know. I said, I guess I am too. Nobody knows why. But I suspect why. We're part of the animal kingdom. Did you read about this kid the other day that swallowed a turtle? Read about that? Well, that's not so bad. At least the turtle didn't have a souvenir of Expo 67 painted on his back. You know, I had a little fracas with a turtle just that type one time. But me and Schwartz and Flick and Bruner were already beginning that. We're standing on this stream bank on the day that we started to do what we finally wound up getting shot at for doing. Looking down on that muddy water. And you could smell in the air the river, the bullheads, the mud. You could smell the dump, which was about a half mile away. That's another male thing. There's hardly a male who doesn't go past the dump without a vague feeling that he'd like to stop by and see if he could find something great. That's definitely a male thing, isn't it? And so we got back on our bikes. All four of us, me, Schwartz, Fleck, and Bruner, with an unspoken thing hanging in our craw. Because hanging in that air through it all, laced through that river smell, through that dump smell, was the smell of rapidly ripening Indiana cantaloupes. Millions of them. They lay in the fields for miles around us. You ever seen a cantaloupe growing? Have you ever seen a cantaloupe blossom? I'll bet not many of you have ever seen cantaloupe flowers. Well, they're a big, almost kind of a lily-like flower, a great big horn-shaped flower. Did you ever see them? A big yellow-orange flower. And you could see them on the ground, all those cantaloupe blossoms. Smell those cantaloupes in the air. So we get on our bikes, and we ride back along that long road. All the cars, all the people coming back from official things, offices and shows and stuff. We ride back along the road, and we come home. It's now supper time. We're covered with mosquito bites and mud and crud and millions of things on us. Oh, yes, one of the things, did you know that one of the great things that I think most people have fought at one time or another is the leech.
And you ever, yeah.
Yeah, have you ever had a leech grab you?
Oh, yeah, that's one of those things. My kid brother, when he was in Burma, he said that leeches come there sometimes weigh 5 pounds. He says, occasionally you see a leech that look like a standard 7th Avenue salami. You grab a hold of you there, boy, he's got pinchers and claws and everything else. We'd have leeches, you know, one thing or another. Each of us would have his bottle, a ball jar with a couple of crawdads in it that we brought back. And then came that day. We're on our bikes, we're going on out to the fields, out to the river. And Schwartz brought it up. He said, boy, look at those cantaloupes. Buck said, yeah. Schwartz said, we could take one. Buck said, it's light. Bruner said, he was always kicking. I said, why don't we wait until after it's dark? And that's what we did. We went home. We ran around. Played like, you know, we were kids, eating supper and that stuff. And after supper, we got together on Flick's porch, got on our bikes, left Bruner home, and took off again into the moonlight. Fantastic moonlight, just like it is tonight. Big moon hanging on. Oh, boy. And, you know, this is another male thing. When about 3 male-type kids get walking around, there's an itch that forms inside of them. You can't really put it into words. It has to do with all of it. Girls, rivers, caves, woods, fields, the sky, the moon. You know what I mean? You can't say it. I've never seen anybody really put this into words. The thing, I'm not even saying that women don't have this. I don't know. As a male, I can only say that it's there. And we're riding into this moon and the sense of the illicit. I mean, we could have had all the cantaloupes we wanted, friends. You understand that, don't you? In fact, back in our refrigerator, we had 3 cantaloupes. We always had cantaloupes in our refrigerator at home. Flick's mother grew them off back of her garage. We didn't need cantaloupes. But what we needed to do was steal. That's what we needed. We needed something. Who knows, you know, what it is. It's Eugene Gant. It's Thomas Wolfe. It's F. Scott Fitzgerald. It's Faulkner. It's Ahab. I don't know whether I identify more with Ishmael or Queequeek. Or with, maybe, I don't know. Maybe Ahab. Maybe even the whale. You know, maybe that's more like it. But we're riding out to the country. And each one of us is wearing his jacket. And we figured that if we wore our jackets, we couldn't be seen so good. We got out, yeah, we were already thinking. You know, out we go into the woods, and we fly past the park. We fly past the used car lot down on Kennedy. And our bikes are going, and that moon is hanging out. We must have gone a mile out in the country. And there they were. You could smell them. Have you ever smelled cantaloupes in the moonlight after a hot day and the ground is still warm? You know, the cantaloupe is a strange creature. It's almost all water, and what little fiber there is in it, you know, is kind of just a fiber that connects the water. And what does water do, friends? It retains heat. And the cantaloupe all night long lays out in a cool field and is warm to the touch, like it's alive. Yeah, those cantaloupes laying out there with the silver moonlight just touching the tops of those rounded, voluptuous forms hiding there. Now you're beginning to get what all this is about, friends? It's about a little more than cantaloupes. We were drawn by far greater things. And we go down into the ditch. We put our 3 bikes down there. And we climb up the ditch. The bikes are down in the ditch. You got it? That parallels the road. And it's now about 10:30, 11:15, which is real late for us. And the moon is hanging silver off over there in the west. Great big moon about three-quarters of the way up off from the horizon. And there was a slight hill that rose up towards the end of the field about a quarter of a mile away and dipped down. You could just see the peak, just the peak of this house where the farmer lived who owned all these fields around here. And we figured this was a great field because he couldn't see us because of that hill that rose up and cut off the view from the house to the field. And now the three of us are crawling through the cantaloupe patch. And on each side, as we crawled along the road, you could see those vines lying in there, you know? And in the vines, at night, animals come out. There's all kinds of animals in a cantaloupe patch at 10 and 11 o'clock at night. You hear things go, away you go. George, what's that? What's that? We'd lay there. Then you'd hear, what the heck was that? And you'd see little green eyes peering at you from under the vines. Varmints, just things. Raccoons. Boy, there's nothing that a raccoon goes more ape over than a warm cantaloupe. He's looking at us. We're out there with the raccoons, with the muskrats. You could hear a black snake once in a while. He'd go skittering over the path. And millions of field mice. Do you know that at night, field mice come out like grasshoppers in the afternoon? You see them all over. Yeah. Big owls come over. Owl flies past. This place is alive. We could just see the touch of light from the farmer's house, from the window, just outlining the peak of that hill over there. And we are crawling forward. And Schwartz has got his scout knife. I have got the knife that my Uncle Carl gave me. That knife which was shaped like a lady's leg. And, if you held it up, you know, if you held it up to the light, there was a little shield on it out of silver. If you held it up to the light, it had a hole in it. You could see this lady in there. What a lady. Phew. You ought to see the way she was dressed. And, I take my knife, and George takes his knife, and we cut off a cantaloupe. We cut it in half. Oh, wow. That cantaloupe is ripe and rich. Take a bite of the cantaloupe. You dump all the cantaloupe seeds out, you eat the cantaloupe. Flick is over in the next row. He's eating a cantaloupe. We eat another cantaloupe. We each have a cantaloupe apiece. Now we've got two cantaloupes down in our gut. These are big ones. These are Indiana cantaloupes. Each one of these cantaloupes went about 2, maybe 3 pounds. Great big babies, you know. And then Schwartz says, let's take a couple of them with us, huh? I said, okay, Schwartz. Let's get some big ones. Like, boy, look at this one. Wow. Great big cantaloupe. And he cuts it off, and a big one's about the size of a basketball. I take a couple of cantaloupes. We get these cantaloupes. Each guy's got 2 cantaloupes, big ones, you know, in his arms. And we start crawling back. And all of a sudden, just like that, out of the darkness, you hear, oh, 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 oh. Schwartz is a dog. Oh, 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 oh. And you hear a door slam, bam, boom. Oh, 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 oh. Schwartz is, the farmer's coming out. Oh, 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 oh. You hear like, who? He's up on the hill. Look at him. I can see him. And you can see that figure standing up there with the moonlight on it. And next to him is this gigantic dog. You can see his teeth. It's like the Hound of the Baskervilles. He's got big yellow teeth that light up in the dark. It's some kind of an enormous mastiff or something. He's going, oh, 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 oh. And that farmer hollers. That voice, boy, that still feel that voice. I still hear it. He says, who's down there? Who's down there in that field? George said, shh, no more. He can't see us. It's dark down here. Shh. Who's down there? And you tell me who's down there, I'm going to shoot. Flick goes, shoot. He's going to shoot. Who's out there? George says, let's get out of here. I said, yeah. And we start crawling. We turn around, we're crawling through the dark. And all of a sudden, the farmer lets out one last blast.
I see you down there. Who's down there?
And then, all of a sudden, out of the darkness, kaboom! And you hear all around you, like a million bees.
Now, who's down there? I'll give you one more chance.
And we are running like hell. We are running. I'm telling you, we are running like there's no tomorrow. Boom! Ka-pow! Flint goes, ow! He hit me! And we ran down into the ditch. We dump our... Down goes our cantaloupes. On the bike we go. And we go scurrying off into the night. And the dog is going, ow, 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 ow. We ride our bikes. I'll tell you, we must have gone 75 miles an hour until we came to the Shell station. And at that point, Schwartz says, I gotta stop. I can't go. I gotta stop. And all three of us rushed into the John in the Shell station, scared. Scared out of our skull. Flick was nicked with a BB. You could see it on his elbow. It's a little nick. There's a little blood. Schwartz says, he shot you, Flick. Flick says, yeah. And all of a sudden, I could feel those cantaloupes coming up from deep inside my gut. Wow! Oh! Schwartz is catching, you know, friends. Schwartz, get out of the way! And now he's over the sink. And within 30 seconds, we, all three of us, have unmooshed at least 9 cantaloupes used all over the Shell station. So, friends, crime does not pay. Oh, but were those great cattle while they lasted?